Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, last night we ended on the media bus, and today, following the women's singles final, you find us inside an enormous car in Greenwich Village. We're a bit late today because we've just been in the company of Mary Carillo and having a lovely little time with her before we recorded the podcast. Catherine's here, Matt's here. It's been lovely, hasn't it? And it's been a lovely day because we had a really good final in the end, Catherine, I thought, second set between Iga Świątek and Ons Jabeur. For about 45 minutes, I think you got the rivalry you're always talking about that you want.
Yes, and I'm very torn between celebrating that and lamenting there not being more of it, quite frankly. And rather than repeat myself, because my appearance on this podcast might be rather brief. It'll last however long this rather luxurious Uber ride lasts, because David apparently only orders SUVs with tinted windows.
I just wanted to have a go at being cool.
Safety first. I won't repeat myself. I'll just refer back to everything I said about the Garcia-Jabeur match on women's semi-finals night, and the fact that women should be playing best of five sets in this stage of a slam because the matches would be better. And Ons Jabeur would have had more of a chance to make a match of it today because she needed time to settle. It was a tough watch for the first set. And that there's obviously two factors involved in that, and one of those is the force that is Iga Świątek in finals. And I think it's Iga Świątek's final record, going all the way back to Polona Herzog in 2019, is one of the most incredible stats in tennis at the moment, and a really meaningful stat. You know, there's a lot of stats that are quirky or fun, you know, a bit whimsical, just sort of, you know, throw away. The stat of her not having lost a set in a final since she became a Grand Slam champion, that's 10-0 now, 20 sets and no lost sets. That is such a powerful statistic. Something happens to Iga Świątek in finals.
What is it? What does happen, do we think?
It's strange because she seems to stop doubting herself. And I just sort of think, oh, well, if you're capable of that, why not just do that all the time? But I don't know. Maybe
it's deadline.
Maybe it's deadline pressure. Maybe it's, you know, some people are just those people that unless it's due the next day, they can't get their arse in gear. She doesn't strike me as one of those people, but maybe she is.
She was kind of asked about it, Matt, in a press conference, wasn't she? What do you do in the run-up to a final I got the sense the idea was to try to get to the bottom of where this comes from.
Yeah, and she said that she hates the days before a final, that she's actually quite stressed and she does have doubts. But yeah, something happens when she steps on the court in the final and all that goes away. And actually, this was the most astonishing one yet, I think, because she hadn't been playing anywhere close to this level during the tournament. You know, we've talked about her Roland Garros finals. Well, they were preceded by really incredible dominant performances during the tournament. This was preceded by not her best performances leading up. You know, she was doubting herself and she didn't have full control of the ball. And all of those things we've talked about for the full 2 weeks just went away as soon as she stepped on the court today. She was 3 love up in 8 minutes, and the intensity of her footwork, I thought, was better. Her strike on the ball was cleaner. And it was Iga Świątek in the final. And I thought it might happen, but to see it from the position she had been in all tournament was absolutely astonishing and a marker of that is who she is in finals.
And it was 6-2, 3-1 at one stage. There was a moment in the first set where Ange Bird did reel off 2 games in a row, Catherine, but she was having to play lights out tennis to reel off a couple of points in a row, wasn't she? And the fact that that didn't end up being a blowout of a match is a great credit to Jabeur.
Yeah, it had to be winners, didn't it? She couldn't really just hang in rallies and rely on forced errors or unforced errors from the Świątek racket. Those just weren't happening. And yeah, it was a bit reminiscent of the fourth set with Alcaraz and Tiafoe last night, that she was twice a break down, Jabeur, in that second set, and twice broke back and forced that tie break. And it felt like she had the weight of momentum behind her going into that tie break. And I'm sure we will talk, or you perhaps will talk, in some detail about that slightly bizarre tie break. Very enthralling, but slightly odd in some ways, I think. She again, similarities to Tiafoe, she was looking a bit down and out and a bit lost at the start of that second set. She had a slight, well, what can I do? It's not happening for me demeanour about her. And I don't know whether it was experience or Melanie Maillard, her mental coach, sitting in her box, but she summoned something on Jabeur. And it might be that something which enables her to follow through on her promise after the match that she will win one of these one day. And the curve would suggest she will.
Yeah. A bit like Tiafoe said the day before, wasn't it? I quite like that when it's not somebody else saying, oh, you'll win one of these days. It's them saying, no, I will.
Yes, and I feel more confident that Jabeur will than Tiafoe. I would love Tiafoe's foresight to come true. Not foresight, prediction for himself to come true. But if I had to predict one of those, who will be the Martina Hingis of the future, I'd be more likely to go for Tiafoe rather than... I think Jabeur... What I'm trying to say is I think Jabeur is going to win one of these. I do. But I think she might have to get a bit better first. And I think there might be a bit of a lag in this, but I think Świątek is going to bring players up behind her. I think she's raising the bar now. And what something that Greg Rozetsky was saying, and Jim Courier agreed with him in our post-match analysis on Prime Video, was that her shots don't have a particularly high anxiety tolerance. When she gets tight, they are prone to going off the boil, and some people's technique is more prone to it than others. And Greg thinks she needs to develop ways to put more spin on the ball reliably, so that when she is tight, it doesn't all dramatically fall apart in the way that it did in the opening stages of the match today. And I back her to do all that. Her whole career has been steady progression, hasn't it? I think there might be a period of Świątek dominance and a period of adjustment from the rest of the tour, but she'll pull the rest up behind her. That's how progress happens.
I did think that point about the sort of margin for error and the lack of spin that she has on the ball, whilst it causes the damage, it does the damage to the opponent, and that's how she kind of forced her way back into it. You saw it even in the last 3 points of the match, Matt. She kind of lifted forehands long. There was just no control in those really tight match moments. I think Catherine's right there. You know, there was a stiffness to the shots, and you can kind of understand it. But how close did it feel to you in the second set? You were in the stadium watching all of that match. Was there a moment in the match where you thought, I could genuinely see this turning around now?
Definitely. And actually, the two sets were mirror images of each other. Well, they were carbon copies of each other, I should say, because it was Three Love, Świątek. Jabeur got the break back. Świątek broke again. And then in the first set, she went on to win it 6-2. The exact same thing happened at the start of the second set. It was Three Love, Świątek, and she actually had two break points for Four Love, and it felt over to me at that point. Jabeur double faulted to go 15-40 down, Three Love down. I thought it was a matter of time. Jabeur got the break back. Świątek broke again, and I thought, okay, well, it's happening again. It's a copy of the first set. But then Jabeur broke back, and that stage from the middle of the second set right up to the tie break, I genuinely thought Jabeur had a chance of pinching that set. She started to serve better. She was serving really poorly in the first set, and it took like a set and a half for Świątek to miss a return. Like, it was relentless from Świątek. Jabeur was just struggling to hold. But Jabeur grew into the match. I felt like Świątek's level dropped quite a lot from where it was at the beginning. And I did feel, and I think the stadium felt, like Jabeur really had a chance of turning that around. She saved a match point, which just only helped her to grow in confidence going into the tie break. But then, as Catherine alluded to, it was a really messy tie break. I think there were 12 points, 9 of them against the serve, and most of them unforced errors. There was one incredible Świątek forehand up the line towards the end, which sort of sealed it, but It was tight, and that was both ends. Like, Świątek was kind of a little bit there for the taking in that latter portion of the second set, I did feel.
Of the 7 points won by Iga Świątek in that tie break, 6 were forehand errors by Ons Jabeur, and 1 was a forehand winner from Świątek herself.
Wow. And what was going on with the racket at the set point?
I don't know.
tell us what happened, Matt.
It was match point.
Match point, okay.
It was on the Jabeur serve. It was Świątek's match point, and she changed her racket.
Świątek did.
Yeah, which is something she's been doing a lot the whole tournament. She's been switching rackets, changing tensions, getting rackets sent off to be restrung. It's been a bit curious, to be honest, how often she's done it. But I've never seen someone do it literally just before their match point. And there was quite a lot of talk on Twitter mainly about whether it was gamesmanship and whether it was to try and put on Jabeur off. Well, Jabeur said she didn't even notice, because, I mean, Świątek did do it very quickly, and it didn't work because she then missed a backhand, Świątek. But she said that she felt like she wanted to do it earlier, but she was doubting herself because some umpires have told her that she shouldn't be doing it so much. But she just put her foot down and said, no, I am going to do it. I need a new racket. My strings are losing tension. But yeah, I don't really understand it, to be honest.
It could be because the balls have got into her head. I don't know.
I mean, this whole tournament, I feel like Craig Tizer must be watching it thinking, maybe Ash Barty could have won the US Open. Like, champions just, right? And Iga Świątek said in her press conference that Toronto, Cincinnati, yeah, she wasn't used to the balls, but as this tournament has gone on, she has got more and more used to them. And as we saw today, she's perfectly capable of controlling this ball.
And she said, you know, exactly that I am... I know I'm capable of doing anything, really, adjusting to any ball. It's just that it's not necessarily ideal. It was kind of a lovely little sort of humble brag, really, wasn't it? She wasn't trying to brag, but it's just so obvious she's that good. She can still do it. But, I mean, it is an interesting storyline when you consider it from the tournament, that was such a... That put such doubt in all of our minds at the start of the tournament, didn't it? And yet here she is, holding the trophy.
Well, that and New York, you know, and Świątek saying that she's not a big fan of the crazy and the noise and the buzz, and those two factors combined really made me think Świątek wasn't going to win this title. And that, I think, is what ends up making this, I don't want to say her most impressive slam, because she won the 2020 COVID French Open out of nowhere. It was incredible what she did there, and she backed up, you know, this year's Roland Garros. It was the exclamation point of her streak, wasn't it? And there was a lot of pressure on her. But this one's very different, because I think she came in with still expectation on her as the world number one, but doubts, you know, about whether she's comfortable on Ash. And she hasn't played her best tennis this whole tournament, and she still won it. And that is the real mark of a champion. And Catherine said, I feel like we're ready for a period of Świątek dominance. I mean, we're in it. She is a dominant world number one.
Yeah, because we've had a lot recently of players playing their best for the period of Grand Slam tournament and winning it and being incredibly impressive, and us not really knowing what it means or what to do with it in terms of projecting into the future. And this feels extremely different, doesn't it? I think back to the Australian Open for Iga Świątek at the start of the year, and her battle with perfectionism that she was telling us about in the press conference room. You know, that was kind of her battlefield for the year, and she's just won a Grand Slam on a hard court playing, I think, actually pretty far from her best.
Amazing to think that, isn't it?
And I think that's, I mean, it's not necessarily the battle won, because battles aren't won forever. But I certainly think it's, you know, she's clearly broken the back of what was her Achilles heel.
Yeah, and I mean, in the first answer that she gave in the press conference, she talked about how proud she felt of herself that she'd managed to win it playing like this, because, like you say, she knew this wasn't her best tennis, and goodness knows what she might do when she gets to the Australian Open,
where she likes the balls.
Yes, yeah, she does. She does like the balls. And how about this? We've arrived.
Have we?
We have. Well, we've got out the taxi. I'm going to take this opportunity while Catherine's waiting for her next taxi to pick her up to just remind you about our competition for AO Travel and the chance for you to win a trip to the Australian Open. Two return economy flights, tickets for 4 days for you and a guest, if you're a friend of the Tennis Podcast, accommodation and a premium travel experience. They've got some amazing stuff. They've got wine tasting experiences, they've got behind the scenes tours at the Australian Open, they've got Rod Laver Arena walk-ons, all available at AO Travel. Just go to ausopentravel.com, that's ausopentravel.com. Go and check out what they've got, and also become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you'd like to enter our competition. You've got until Friday the 16th of September. So Catherine has got 2 minutes until her taxi comes. Catherine, is Ons Jabeur going to be a Grand Slam champion? And if so, how long do you think it takes?
Oh, I was just going to say yes, but please don't ask me to put a timeline on it. In the next year. I think she'll win one next year.
2023, Catherine says Ons Jabeur, Grand Slam champion.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, that's good. Nice and punchy.
Could someone agree with me to make me feel better? Matt?
I could get on board with that. I mean, she said that it took her a while to win her first WTA title. So she's treating this like that. You know, it's going to take experience to try and win her first Grand Slam title. It was odd how different this was to her Wimbledon final, where she started well at Wimbledon and then faded. And here it was kind of the opposite. But I quite like the fact that she grew into this one. This one, in a way, gives me more confidence, I think. I mean, I think Wimbledon feels like a big opportunity because Świątek's struggling at Wimbledon.
She's beaten her at Wimbledon.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, she's reached this on a hard court. She can play on anything. That's her great gift. She's going to be a threat everywhere. But I still think those natural surfaces, clay and grass, are a great time for Ons Jabeur.
Just before we wave you off into the distance, Catherine, can we have a quick view on tomorrow's men's singles final, please? Carlos Alcaraz against Casper Ruud. What are you thinking?
I do think Carlos Alcaraz will win. But if you told me before the tournament it's going to be Carlos Alcaraz and Casper Ruud in the final, I'd have gone, oh, crikey. Well, Alcaraz is going to crunch him. And I don't feel that way about it. I've learned a lot about Casper Ruud this fortnight. I feel like he might have learned a lot about himself. And he's... Sounds really patronising to say he's gone up in my estimations, as if he's spent 2 weeks sort of trying to prove himself to me. But I think a lot more of him as a tennis player.
I do actually need your newsletter prediction for Casper Ruud versus Carlos Alcaraz and the number of sets, please. So what are you saying?
We're going to bleep this bit out.
Are we?
There's no point in being in the newsletter otherwise, is there?
Well, there's plenty of other predictions in the newsletter.
Predictions in the newsletter. Alcaraz in four.
Night.
Perfect. Thank you. Good night.
Night.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
So, there goes Catherine into the night. And she's going to go and sleep up ahead of a big day. At the US Open. She's going to be presenting Prime Video's coverage in the UK, which should be interesting. I mean, and look, I do think the fact that it is best of five, I mean, we've talked about this over the years. I think today was a perfect case in point. This match, Ons Jabeur against Iga Świątek, just about got away with it, Matt, because Jabeur was running out of time there. It was 6-2, 3-1, and had it ended up 6-2, 6-1, I wouldn't have been surprised. I think it's a great credit to Jabeur that she managed to make something of that. But had she known going in that that was a best-of-five set final, I think she's more relaxed. I think she's probably able to go for her shots more and not get three love down necessarily in 8 minutes. She might have done. But I definitely think it's a factor. And even if she doesn't start well enough, she's just got more time to turn it around and make a match of it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose people who are perfectly fine with best of three will say, well, she did turn it around. So there is time to find your game and make a match of it. But it was right at its best point, wasn't it, when the match stopped. And it's interesting because I do think best of three is really suiting Świątek and that approach she takes in the final, this idea of on deadline. It's like she's in a rush. It's like she's got an hour of the most majestic tennis, and can I get the match won in that time? And she almost did it today. She almost, you know, she was up a set and a break, and it felt like that was it. But she just got reined in, and it became a real match. But yeah, look, we've said it before. I like best of three tennis. I don't have a problem with best of three tennis, but I don't see what the harm would be in letting these women play best of five as well.
For these showpiece matches, to elevate them when all the eyes, all the attention, all the TV coverage is on that one match, and you want to avoid a blowout, you don't want... I mean, that could have been off the court in 50 minutes.
And, I mean, you do sometimes get blowouts in best of five, and then it's a sort of really slow death, and that's painful as well, but... We do see it a lot, that a player gets tight at the start and they don't have the time, the runway that the men do to get into it.
You're certainly giving it more chance, aren't you?
You are, exactly.
I was quite taken by Anshuber's press conference, and she looked composed. I mean, she said that after the Wimbledon final, what she was asked, what did you do? You know, what did you do to recover? Well, she says, the first thing I did was cry a lot and let the emotion out, and that's fine, you know, that's part of coming to terms with these results, and then she took a bit of time, but she said with this, you know, I mean I often think this, it's so soon after the match, both for the winner and the loser to make any sense of anything, to make any kind of prognostication for the future, or what are you going to do next? I mean, most of the winners are thinking, I just want to go and lie in a dark room. I mean, actually, Świątek said, I'm going to go to the theatre, but she wouldn't tell us which theatre, because she said, I just kind of want to be on my own. I want to be left alone. And she's not trying to be mean to anyone. You know, she's got this enormous support. I mean, it was incredible out in the public area at the US Open today when she came out and she went to the ESPN studios, and she's sitting there with, I think, Darren Cahill was there, and Chris McKendry who's presenting. And it's in the public area. So a huge crowd builds around of people wanting to get in the back of the TV shop. And they were chanting, Iga, Iga, Iga. There were hundreds of them, all in the Polish red and white colours, with flags. It was an amazing sight. But it did make me realise, and reminds me of what Stefanos Tsitsipas said, that when he made his breakthrough at the Australian Open, he said, I love you, Melbourne, but please leave me alone. And you can see Świątek just wanting to kind of disappear into the background for a bit now. But for Jabeur, she said, no, I've got to analyse this match. I've got to watch it back, talk to my psychologist, my coach, and work out where I let myself down. Not that she was giving Świątek all the credit, but she obviously thinks there's something that she can do to improve in the future, and she's going to do it by being analytical about and self-criticise.
Yeah, exactly. She said she'd give it a few days, and then they would get back to work. And she laid out her goals pretty clearly. She wants the number one spot. You know, I know Świątek is way off into the distance right now, but Jabeur made the point that she's not got points from Australia because she didn't play that tournament. She went out in the first round of Roland Garros and Wimbledon, there were no points. Like, that's a big goal for her next season, to become world number one, chase Świątek down. And it, you know, you can see a route to that, with Świątek having to defend so many points, which, you know, she may well do that. But yeah, I do really trust Jabeur to take this, learn from it, improve from it. That's been her whole career. She's got better year on year, and the only way you can really get better from this year is finally winning one of these titles. And yeah, I just back her.
The other thing she's got that, say, somebody like Naomi Osaka hasn't got is a choice of surfaces that she can perform on. because at the moment Osaka can't really win on clay. She can't really win on grass. It's hard court or nothing. Even with Świątek, you'd have to say the grass is a weakness. And I think it will be very interesting to see which one, if at all, she breaks through on first. And I really wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being clay, personally. I mean, I know that there's a strong argument for grass. Because the flat hit on the forehand is definitely part of that. I mean, and I think when we were talking about that lacking that sort of margin for error and the point Greg Rosetsky had made to Catherine, which I do find an interesting one, that's something Barty had that she doesn't at the moment, I would say. You know, she was able to just loop that forehand and slice that backhand if she was tight and if she didn't want to be aggressive and creative. But she could still be in there. You know, it's a big deal, isn't it? But look, Świątek's a worthy winner. I think it's really cool that the world number one has won on another surface other than clay now. That can't be held against her anymore. And I mean, she's going to go into the Australian Open, unless something dramatic changes, surely as the favourite.
Yeah, I think she has to now. She came in here, I think, as the favourite, even without having won a Grand Slam on a hard court. And yeah, this is a big deal, I think. This third major, second on a different surface. Like, there are some real historical things she's done, you know, in terms of, like, I think she's the eighth youngest woman in the Open era to have won three majors. She's still only 21. I think only Enan and Serena in the last 15 years have won multiple majors in the same year on different surfaces, which is something she's now done as well. Like, Iga Świątek is building an incredible career, and I get the feeling she's really hungry. You know, she wants to win multiple French Open titles. She wants to win the Australian Open and do things that she hasn't done yet. And she is by far and away the best player in the world at the moment. And as we said, she won this tournament playing not her best tennis for most of the matches. I think she played her best tennis in the first set today. I think she was pretty close to it in the last set against Sabalenka. But otherwise, this is a tournament she's won without that best tennis. And that, I'd be pretty scared about that.
Yeah, me too. Well, we stand outside our hotel at the moment, having dropped Catherine off, and there's some interesting characters around, I can tell you, on a Saturday night at nearly 1 in the morning. This is fun. Very entertaining. Yeah, we have Iga Świątek, the winner in the women's singles. We've got the men's singles tomorrow with Carlos Alcaraz up against Casper Ruud. What do you think Ruud needs to do to win that match?
Play the match of his life. Make it long and physical, but Alcaraz's fifth set record is astonishing. But I think if Alcaraz spends 2 and a bit hours on court tomorrow, he'll have the longest ever, in terms of time, route to a Grand Slam title. He has spent so much time on court, and most of it in the second week. I did think he looked a little bit fatigued at the end against Tiafoe. So maybe that. I don't know. I'm finding it hard to see a Ruud win unless Alcaraz really drops his level. I mean, what does Ruud do better than Alcaraz?
When Alcaraz is at his best. I think that is the key. Because I would say, first of all, I think Ruud is playing some of the best tennis I've ever seen him play, certainly on a hard court.
For sure. He is playing really, really well. And Alcaraz has won their last two matches in straight sets, but Ruud is playing better than he was in Miami, for example, I think.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if Ruud doesn't turn up. I think it'll be a bit like Jabeur today. Second major final. This will be. He hasn't got Rafael Nadal against him on clay, I mean, you know, which is the ultimate challenge. And that was his first one. I think he'll be better equipped for this, and he'll play well. There has to be a chance, and not that small a chance, that Carlos Alcaraz has one of those days where he misses inexplicably large amounts of the time. I mean, that happened a lot against Jannik Sinner at Wimbledon. It happened a lot against Alexander Zverev at Roland Garros. Now, he's in way better form than he was then, but he does play incredibly aggressive tennis. He has had 3 5-set matches. I do think that that's a possibility. I really do.
I agree. I do agree that that is a possibility. So I mean, what we're saying is Ruud needs to keep in touch, I think.
I think so.
I've heard Rafa Nadal talk about tennis in terms of moments. You know, it's a long 5-set match, but there are moments within a 5-set match where you need to capitalize. And if Alcaraz dips, Ruud needs to be with him to take advantage of that. And if Alcaraz is playing really well, Ruud just needs to show that he's not going to go away. You know, he needs to keep his demeanor up. I mean, it almost sounds like I'm saying Alcaraz is a clear favorite here. I'm sort of treating him as someone who's won one of these things before. As you said, he hasn't. It's possible.
Feels like he has, though.
It's possible that, you know, first Grand Slam final, he's not going to play his best. But yeah, game wise, I like Alcaraz over Ruud.
Yeah. So I mean, so do I. Look, I think, yeah, I'll be going Alcaraz, and you can have a look at your newsletter in order to find out how many sets I think, because we're only going to give away the Catherine Whittaker prediction here on the podcast. but it's going to be fascinating to find out. So anyway, sign up to the newsletter. We do them every single day during Grand Slam tournaments, all of them, and we do them weekly throughout the year, and they've got Matt's stat in them, they've got our predictions, they've got details of our competition with AO Travel, win a trip to the Australian Open, they've got loads of stuff. So what else happened today, Matt? Because when we got in, it was the mixed doubles final. And also we had the wheelchair doubles final. Those matches were both going on.
Yeah, we had a lot of matches today, a lot of finals. The mixed doubles final was won by Storm Sanders and John Peers. They beat Kirsten Flipkins, who is not retired, and Edouard Roger Vasselin in 3 sets. 10-7 in the match tiebreak there. And then we had a host of wheelchair finals as well. The wheelchair men's doubles final was won by Martin de la Puente and Nicolas Piffer over Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid in 3 tight sets.
I watched that actually, and Reid and Hewitt, I mean, they've won this title 5 times before. They won the first set, so actually it's a heck of an achievement for their opponents to turn that around.
The wheelchair women's doubles final was won by the dominant Dida de Groot and Aniek van Koot. The quad wheelchair doubles final was won by Sam Schroeder and Niels on Wheels Vink. And then we had some interesting stories in the juniors as well, because we had 2 junior winners from the Rafa Nadal Academy. Martin Landaluce of Spain won the boys, and Alexandra Iala won the girls. And Alexandra is the first Filipino to win a junior Grand Slam singles title. She beat Lucy Havlikova of the Czech Republic. So a couple of interesting results there. And in the junior wheelchair event, Jade Moreira Lani of Brazil and Ben Bartram of Britain became the first junior girls and boys wheelchair singles Slam champions in history, and then they also won the doubles as well.
It's great that event happened, and you know, hopefully the other slams will decide to follow suit, and this can be a pathway really for wheelchair players to get onto the main circuit and be able to play the tour and play the main Grand Slam tournaments as well. It's fantastic. What else have we got tomorrow, Matt, because we've got a full order of play as well as the men's singles. There are a lot of other finals still to come.
Yes, it starts on Ash with the women's doubles final. Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova against Katie McNally and Taylor Townsend. Very intrigued by that one. Then it's the men's singles final on Ash, and on Armstrong we've got some blockbuster wheelchair singles finals, Shingo Kaneda versus Alfie Hewitt.
Which is a repeat of Wimbledon, isn't it? The final where Alfie Hewitt served for it several times. I mean, that heartbreaking match. And Kaneda, I mean, he's in his 40s now, and hasn't he won something like 20-odd Grand Slam titles?
He he's going for the calendar slam, and no one's done that in the men's wheelchair game. So yeah, that is the place to be, I think, at midday tomorrow. Also, Dida de Groot versus Yui Kamiji follows that. And then on the grandstand, a great quad men's singles final, Niels Vink versus Sam Schroeder.
Wow. Full day. It really is. If you're going to be at Fleshy Meadows tomorrow, you know, just go and have a look around. Before, if you've got tickets on Arthrash Stadium and your plan is to go and see Carlos Alcaraz against Casper Ruud, make sure you get there a few hours early if you can to lap up some of this stuff, because it starts at 11, 12, 1, depending on which court you're on. And it's just fantastic to watch the wheelchair tennis and the doubles events and the juniors. It's great stuff. So, do have a look if you possibly can. So, Matt, another night in New York comes to an end, and we're hearing all these amazing sounds as we stand outside our hotel. I think it's bedtime. We've had our mascot Phoebe, of course, all week long, and it's been great to have Phoebe as our mascot. Matt has got the dearly departed Gerald. I have got Darwin. Catherine has got Carter. I didn't get my prediction right again, Matt. I keep messing up by a set. I said three sets for Świątek, and it's so close.
I also said three sets. We doubted the finals record of Iga Świątek. At least you thought she would win the tournament from the start.
That's quite a good little moment for me, isn't it? I might get a good old boost in the main year-long prediction standing. So fantastic. We have also got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who sponsor Billie Jean the dog. We have got our executive producers, Carl Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee, our top blokes. Anybody else I'm forgetting, Matt?
Don't think so. And we'll save shout-outs for another night.
Another night when we're not standing by the side of the road.
This has been one of the weirder podcasts.
It has, but it's entertaining.
I've enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it too. And don't forget, you can enter our Australian Open competition to win a trip to the Australian Open. I haven't even been drinking. That's... Well, okay, I've had the one. Two beers law. Yes, has been out in force. You can win a trip to the Australian Open with AO Travel. They have been our sponsors, fantastic sponsors of ours throughout the US Open. They're also going to fly us to the Australian Open, which is fantastic. So we'll be able to bring you daily shows when we're out there as well. Make sure you go and have a look at what they've got to offer, because what's good about it, I think, is that you can just go to the one place, faff-free. They'll sort out your flights, they'll sort out your accommodation, they'll sort out your tickets, they'll make nice experiences happen for you. And you could be going to the Australian Open with them, and that's if you don't win our competition. And if you're a friend of the podcast, you might. So become a friend, and you'll also get access to all of our additional podcasts. We're going to be recording another one next week, which will be a review of this tournament. I'm even working on, Matt, you haven't heard it yet, I'm even working on my diary, my audio diary for Friends of the Tennis Podcast here at the US Open.
I love a David audio diary, because I get to be like a friend of the tennis podcast and listen to it having not heard it, and it's always a treat.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, you haven't heard it yet. I think this one's rubbish. No, it's not rubbish. I'm enjoying making it, and I'm going to continue finishing it off tomorrow. So that's for tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all. We've had loads of lovely messages. Thank you for everybody for your support, and for particularly those of you that are friends of the Tennis Podcast, because that's how we've got here. I mean, yes, we've had some help from AO Travel as well, but you basically keep the show on the road. So thank you so much. Enjoy the final day of the US Open, and we will be back with you after play tomorrow. See you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.